Galen Hansen.
Thanks, Dan. I do have one question and then a comment. In the area of firm registrations, I think it's great what the board has done here in the last week to really sort of tighten the screws on the new applications. And I'm not sure what the possibilities in this area are, but it seems to me like the new registrations that are going to come before the board are more than likely going to be smaller firms. And with that in mind, and given what are those possibilities, cannot the current registrants also be considered? And what is the status of those registrations? Because it seems to me like we're sort of catching the tail end of the problem rather than the bulk of the problem. And I think that looking at that audit report or whatever other disclosures to put the investor on notice that, hey, these firms have not been inspected, and, investor beware, at least at a minimum, needs to be considered, and I think you had mentioned that. And then just switching topics, if you back on the public discipline matter, the legislative matter that is being pursued, the comments that I've gotten just from professionals that I rub elbows with at what point are we in investigation and at what point are we in enforcement? Because the perception is that in this role you're going to be, you're not innocent until proven guilty. So I don't know if that's really been communicated particularly very well. There's a lack of clarity as to where that spectrum is. Maybe you might be able to comment on that.
Well, yeah, let me take the second one first. I think for us, there's a very sharp distinction between are you being investigated or is there a proceeding against you? I mean, for those in the room who've been at the SEC, and we essentially have the same parallel system to what they have with a system of investigations based on formal orders of investigation, and then the staff making a determination about whether a case should be brought, and the board having to vote on that. And we're not suggesting at all that the investigatory process become public. And as at the SEC, that would certainly remain non-public. The thing that would trigger a public proceeding would be the staff recommendation to the board that a case be brought, and then the board determination to bring that case. And again, I don't mean to suggest in any of this that all charges that we bring are necessarily valid or ultimately going to be found to be valid, but there is a considerable amount of, often a period of months, sometimes years, investigatory work that goes into making an enforcement recommendation. So they are not at all brought casually or without substantial thought as to whether the charges can be sustained in litigation. On the part about the firm registrations, well, I guess I can only say I agree with you completely. I mean, obviously, we are well aware that most of the foreign firms are already registered with us. And as I tried to say in my comments, this action we took last week does not in itself affect those firms that are already registered. But, I mean, the point about disclosure, for example, and audit opinions is something that we are giving very serious thought to. And, I think you're likely to see proposals in that area, or perhaps the area of bringing work papers into the United States when we can't conduct the foreign inspection, something very much on our mind. And the other thing I'd say is, well, I think your point is right, that this, at least immediately, is going to have a bigger impact on small non-U.S. firms. At least to my understanding, that the large firms do sometimes reorganize their practices outside the United States, and that sometimes triggers a need to register a new firm with us. So large firms may eventually feel some bite from this proposal also.
Barbara Roper? On the same topic, I went and read the EU decision. And I actually think there's a lot of cause for concern in that decision that we aren't really, that the progress that it appears to offer is ephemeral or illusory. It sunsets in 2013. the joint inspections are only allowed under exceptional circumstances. It's viewed as a route toward mutual recognition, not a long-term program of joint inspections, as I can see it. So, I mean, I do just think it reinforces the need to start looking at some of the types of things you've discussed, like having the work papers here, maybe having enhanced supervisory responsibilities, because it's not clear to me that this is a step toward a long-term solution to this problem.
Barbara, I think I can only say that I agree with everything you've said. I would say I think if you want to take the slightly more optimistic view, we think the determination leaves a lot of room for interpretation by individual member states. And at this point, I think it's just not clear how flexibly it'll be interpreted. As I did say earlier, the bottom line is we haven't struck any agreements with anyone yet.
Damon Silvers.
Two things, Dan. One, first, I think a couple other people have commented. I think that both these major initiatives on the board's part with respect to foreign inspections and with respect to the enforcement process are welcome. And I really want to commend you for stepping forward on these things. They've sort of been hanging out there for many years. I think you and the board and the staff deserve a lot of credit. Secondly, I don't know whether this is appropriate for this time or whether you want to take it up during the inspection observations on the economic crisis, but it seems to me that this week there's a number of obvious audit issues raised by developments in the mortgage markets, which I would like to discuss. You tell me when.
Well, it might go better with the 4010 report, if you don't mind.
It's fine with me.
Appreciate your comments, however.
Lynn Turner.
Dan, I'd just like to commend you for your leadership in this area of the foreign inspections and trying to get the enforcement proceedings public. I think under your leadership, the board has done more in the last year than it's done in the previous 8 years of existence, and I think that is a tremendous kudo both to you and your fellow board members. I know these are difficult issues, so I think the direction you're headed in is absolutely correct and very critical to investor protection. I do have a couple questions for you. On the issue on making the enforcement proceedings public. Of course, both you and I were at the commission when the SEC adopted that with the bipartisan support of all the commissioners to have these proceedings public. Are you receiving any opposition from the firms up on the Hill on that issue? I'd be interested in knowing that. On the foreign inspections, you mentioned you're dealing with the Swiss. I would expect it would be very difficult to negotiate such agreements with France and Germany along the lines of what Barb said in terms of joint inspections versus mutual recognition with respect to the four largest markets in Europe, Spain, Europe, Germany, France, and the UK. Have you been able to make any substantive progress on negotiating agreements with those four? And then the last point is you mentioned getting access and oversight over the auditors of broker-dealers. I know the SEC has been pushing Congress to get greater jurisdiction over the municipal markets because of what a number of people consider to be pending problems in those markets and perhaps some systemic problems there. Have you considered teaming up with the SEC there to also ask for oversight over the auditors of municipal securities?
those are the three questions. Just one last point, too. I would also note that I think it would, just in the last week, I've gone out to one of the largest institutional investors in the country and had a discussion about with them about your inspections. And they didn't realize the problems that you've got with foreign, being able to inspect foreign audits. I think there's an assumption that you guys were inspecting all this. I would be very supportive from a transparency perspective, for, especially for investors, if you guys would include a requirement in the audit report for the auditor to say if you were unable to inspect affiliates or audits where part of the work was done outside the U.S. And as a result, we don't have the same degree of confidence we have here for the ones you could inspect. I think it'd be very informative and useful for investors to put them on notice and require that they be put on notice in the audit report.
Okay, thanks for your comments, and I appreciate them very much. In terms of opposition to the proposal to make the enforcement proceedings public, I have heard of none. I'm not aware that anyone has taken a public position against the proposal. I guess I'm not aware that anyone's taken a public position, or any organizations at least have taken a public position in favor of it. Obviously, I have sort of no way of knowing what back channel communication there might be.
Have the firms public or privately told you that they oppose that?
Certainly, no one's told me that, at least. I think the answer is no. I guess I'm a little reluctant to get into details of negotiations with particular countries in the EU. I think it's safe to say that we are not near an agreement with any of the jurisdictions you mentioned. I'll leave it at that. In terms of oversight of municipal securities auditors, I'm aware of some of the problems in that market. It is not something that we've discussed with our colleagues at the SEC. It's certainly something to consider.
Thanks, Dan.
Oh.
And oops, sorry. Is there another one down there? Jeff Mahoney, sorry.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, you might have just answered this, but with respect to the negotiations, can you give us any flavor at all as to the types of concessions that are being asked for or considered?
Well, I mean, let me just speak at a very general level, because I really don't want to impact negotiations with any particular country. There are concerns about data protection, which I understand it could translate into a suggestion that anybody whose name is mentioned in our inspection files somewhere would have some sort of a right to see that information and contest it. That would be a serious problem for us. There is interest on the part of some countries in being able to have at least input into what's in our inspection report on firms in their jurisdiction. That's certainly something of a problem for us. Obviously, we ultimately have to make the determinations about the reports. That's, I guess, that would give a flavor at least of the kinds of things that are a concern. I mean, Barbara quoted correctly the statements in the determination, the statement in the determination about joint inspections being kind of unusual or an exception, and I think there are some jurisdictions that would prefer that we not conduct joint inspections in their territory at all. Thank you. I think I'm done, Marty. Thanks.
Okay, now I can say thanks for passing it back to me, and thanks to everybody else for all of your comments and important observations on the matters that Dan discussed. We appreciate all that input. The next topic we're going to discuss are developments in standard setting in the Office of the Chief Auditor. During this discussion, I'll be making reference to three documents that are in your folders. So you can find these documents now. They're in the left pocket of your folder, about halfway in. They're entitled, one is entitled PCAOB Standard Setting Activities, October 2009 to October 2010. That's a two-page document. The second document is entitled Status of Previous SAG Standard Setting Discussion Topics. Again, it's in the left pocket of your folder, about halfway through. And the next one is a kind of a landscape presentation that says Office of the Chief Auditor Standard Setting Agenda. These were also posted today to our website, so for those listening in, you can access them on the web. So hopefully everybody has these documents. I'll just pause for one more minute as you're... I see Kevin searching to try to find them. We buried them, so... so only an auditor could find them, right? I'll be making reference to these throughout this presentation. Again, I would like to repeat what I said earlier. Please feel free, and I encourage you to raise your tent card throughout this session as I'm covering a variety of different topics, and I think it would be beneficial to all if you have questions and observations to make them at the particular point in time rather than waiting to the end, although certainly we'll have a discussion at the end also. So the first topic I'm going to address very briefly is the PCAOB standard setting activities October 2009 to 2010. This document summarizes for you adopted or proposed standards or other auditing guidance issued over the past year. As you can see in the beginning of the first of this document, and as Dan has already made reference to, this year we adopted 8 new auditing standards, which we collectively refer to as the risk assessment standards. This isn't really a large project. It was a major effort. This represents the culmination, subject to SEC final approval, of this major standard-setting effort. The standards include critical aspects of planning an audit, supervising it, assessing materiality in planning and performing the audit, identifying and assessing risks in an audit and responding to those risks, the auditor's evaluation of audit results and audit evidence. So they do deal with the fundamental aspects of the audit. We also think investors will be well served by the improved integration throughout the risk assessment standards of fraud risk assessments rather than sort of as fraud sat sort of alone in old SAS 99, auditing standard 316 on fraud. These standards largely integrated key elements of considerations of fraud throughout the process, which we think should have significant impact on fraud risk. So again, we've discussed, as I mentioned earlier, discussed these standards with the SAG before. Because of the importance of these standards, we will be making a presentation of the highlights of what we think the most important aspects are on these after lunch. Just moving down the list, we proposed auditing standards pertaining to communications with audit committees and amended various other standards. We received comments on that, and based on those comments, we held a roundtable, of which a number of people here participated in that roundtable. And we reopened the comment period through October 21st, 2010. This standard, we believe, and I'll talk a little bit more about it on the agenda, has some very important aspects. And although a lot of issues were discussed at the roundtable, one thing that was clear was the importance of auditor communications with the audit committee. And we'll focus on that importance as we reconsider the next steps in the standard. The next proposed standard was with respect to confirmations. Again, a very important audit procedure. And in that proposal, we did make more robust requirements surrounding the use of confirmations and audits. Again, because of the importance of this standard, we're going to have a presentation as part of this agenda tomorrow, which will go over, again, the proposal and some of the key comments that we've received. Page two, as I've previously mentioned, we issued a release related to failure to supervise and solicited comments on rulemaking concepts with respect to that provision. That comment period is still open, and we're going to use this SAG meeting as an opportunity for people to make comments about that rulemaking concept, and that item is on our agenda this afternoon. We issued two important staff practice alerts during this year as well. One dealt with audit considerations regarding significant and unusual transactions. We were led to issue that practice alert based upon certain observations we'd seen regarding how some companies structured certain transactions. And companies at times can structure transactions in a way in which the economic substance might not be exact as to what the form of the transaction is. So auditors have responsibilities with respect to identifying, auditing, communicating significant and unusual transactions, and this practice alert was intended to remind auditors of their responsibilities in this regard. Another practice alert we issued was practice alert 6 on audit considerations regarding using the work of other auditors and engaging assistance from outside the firm. As we had discussed at a SAG meeting before issuing this practice alert, the practice was observed where through a variety of reverse mergers and other vehicles, businesses that largely had their operations almost virtually completely outside the United States were receiving audit reports from firms in the United States who were not following appropriate standards either with respect to supervision in the audit, AU 311, or using the work of other auditors in AU 543, and were issuing audit reports not in accordance with PCOB standards in these situations. So, again, this practice alert was intended to remind auditors of their responsibilities here. And this was a significant problem with a number of reverse mergers and reports that we think were inappropriately issued. Hopefully this will, to some extent, remind auditors of their proper responsibilities in this area. And then the last item was a Q&A on Auditing Standard 7, Engagement Quality Review, to clarify one aspect of that standard. In summary, I think we had a very active year with respect to the standard setting, proposals, and other guidance, in addition to the many, many items that we're working on a regular basis on our standard setting agenda that I'll go over in just a moment. The next document that I'd like to briefly cover is the status of previous SAG standard setting discussion topics. When I reached out to SAG members for advice about a year ago or so, many SAG members indicated that they had participated in discussions throughout the years, but it wasn't always clear as to what was happening with that particular discussion, where it went. So what we've decided to do is make a document that's really an accounting, if you will, for discussion dates when we had a discussion topic, what the topic was, and what the status of that is. So this is organized by most recent topic first, down to the earliest topics last. I'll very briefly go through this, but again, please to respond to any questions or comments throughout it. FASB, IASB projects and potential challenges, standard setting is under consideration, and again, we're looking for SAG input on the impact of this. FASB actions and the changed large degree of the change in the accounting frameworks potentially and the impact on auditors and maybe the need for additional auditing standards. Dan's already referred to our broker-dealer audit considerations, and that is a current standard-setting project. Auditors' responsibilities to subsequent events, is a current standard-setting project. The auditor's reporting model, a current standard-setting project. I'll go through these current standard-setting projects in substantially greater detail when I go through our standard-setting agenda in a few moments. Responsibilities of the principal auditor, again, Practice Alert 6 dealt with that to some degree, and it's also a current standard-setting project. The same with the next two items, fair value measurements and the use of specialists, are current standard-setting projects. Communications with audit committees, I've already updated you. Related parties is a current standard-setting project, as is confirmations below that. Engagement quality review, as you're aware, we've published and is now effective for audits in 2010, AS7 on engagement quality reviews, which standard we think will significantly improve audit practice. Going concern, a current standard-setting project. Audit considerations in the current economic environment is a topic, and we published Staff Practice Alert 3 to help guide auditors about the risks in the current economic environment. One discussion we had with the SAG was regarding an ACAP recommendation on feasibility of the PCAOB identifying audit quality indicators and then possibly the requirement for firms to disclose something with respect to those audit quality indicators. We've had a number of discussions, including, as I said, a discussion with the SAG back in October 2008. While not a current standard-setting project, we are, as the footnote indicates, monitoring closely the work of others in this area, such as IOSCO and the IAASB, as indicated they have a project on this as well. So we'll continue to monitor efforts of others as we consider what direction to take on this particular item. Dan's already commented on signing the auditor's report, and I've already commented on auditor's responsibility to supervise and our current release we have out on that. A discussion was held on page 3 of this with respect to the proposal relating to a judgment framework, the CIFER recommendation, and as Dan indicated, that is under consideration. But we're also considering that as to the extent the SEC makes recommendations in that regard. Quality controls, as I mentioned, is a current standard-setting project, and that's on our agenda during this session. Audit implications of IFRS statements in U.S. SEC filings. It indicates pending review of interim standards. As we update any interim standard, and we have a number of proposals in place, we are making sure that our references to U.S. GAAP are changed and our standards are intended to be framework neutral. So this will sort of continue to be updated on a regular basis to make our standards framework neutral. But in addition to that, as we identify particular issues in IFRS that may not exist in GAAP, we may consider other standard-setting projects pertaining to that. And then, of course, any decision by the SEC with respect to the adoption of IFRS might impact our standard-setting activities in that regard as well. So there's a number of ways in which our standard-setting projects could be impacted with respect to IFRS. Some years ago, a discussion was held about engagement team performance, and that's being addressed through various projects that we have that address responsibilities, supervision of the engagement team, et cetera. But that'll be ongoing. Forensic audit procedures were discussed with the SAG, and there is no current standard-setting project on forensic audit procedures. Implementation of 404 resulted in AS5, as you're all aware. The last item on this page, indemnification and limitation of liability clauses, is not a current standard-setting project. Page 4. Risk assessment standards we've discussed have been adopted. Principles of reporting are reflected in AS number 6. Reasonable assurance, not pending review of interim standards, but to some degree this item could potentially be covered in the auditor's reporting model, which we'll talk about in a much broader sense, a variety of changes, which could consider clarification of what reasonable assurance means. Codification of standards. This is mentioned to us in a number of comment letters. Right now, we sort of have two bodies of literature. what was adopted as part of the interim standards, the AU references, and then recently adopted standards, which number from AS1 through now AS15, and which are not, except the risk assessment standards, although they're organized logically from AS8 through AS15, not integrated with respect to other aspects of the interim standards that are in place. This is an important consideration of ours in terms of how we're going to deal with this. To a large degree, we think the most important thing for us is to deal with the very many projects that we intend to propose standards on over the next couple of years, in which I'll be reviewing momentarily. But at the same time, we do have our staff considering how we might codify new standards with interim standards until they're, you know, we finally adopt all interim standards as, quote, final standards. This is a complicated consideration because the interim standards, anytime we would try to adopt them as a final standard, it would be a rulemaking activity that would open up the interim standard for comment. So it's not simply a matter of trying to blend them all together. It's a much more complicated process than that. So we're listening to people about the importance of this matter, considering ways to deal with it, and we suspect we'll get back to the SAG on this further discussion in the near term. Gas hierarchy was discussed some time ago, and not doing anything particularly with that at this point in time. AS4 dealt with reporting the material weaknesses. Fraud and related topics are very important, and as I indicated with respect to risk assessment, we think dealt with throughout the risk assessment standards as they incorporate fraud concepts throughout. We think that's a superior approach to build our concepts of risk of fraud into each of our standard-setting projects rather than one standard that deals just with fraud, and which our inspectors have noted kind of allows the audit teams to think of fraud potentially one time when they have a brainstorming session or something at the beginning of an audit, and oftentimes don't integrate those processes into the audit. So what we're doing is integrating fraud risk concerns and approaches into each standard that we propose. The auditor's responsibility for communications to investors containing financial information. So this would be other financial information, press releases, and things of that nature. Some have commented that some of the most important communications to investors are in the press release, which really drives the market more than, and the price of a stock, more than the ultimate 10K does. We've had discussions with this, with the investor advisory group pointed this out, and we're aware, of course, of the importance of other financial communications that are not the financial statements covered by an auditor's report. We don't have a standard set project particularly on this matter, but we have it. We're well aware of the importance of this. To some extent, it's possible the discussion of the auditor's reporting model might have, in the concept release, some aspects of how this could be played into auditor's reporting. So at this point in time, though, that's not a current standard-setting project. So with that, that's a review of every discussion topic that we've had as official standard-setting projects that we've brought to the SAG and where they stand. And as you can see, by and large, we've either adopted a standard, proposed a standard, or we have the matter as a current standard setting item on our agenda. So the next item I'd like to discuss with you is this landscaped document called the Office of the Chief Auditor Standard Setting Agenda. The top two pages of the agenda are important because they include a discussion of factors that drive our standard setting agenda. These points are summarized on this slide that we've just put up. Matters get onto our standard setting agenda based on how we and the board identify priorities. The staff makes recommendations and discusses these items with the board. The board often gives us direction as to items they believe should be on our agenda as well. Identification of risks in audits and needed improvements to existing standards and to audit quality initially drive that prioritization. That is then significantly informed by the results of PCAOB inspections and other factors. Environmental factors are an important element of such other factors. First, and as I've mentioned, financial reporting fraud continues to be a major concern of investors, and reports of fraud can shake investor confidence in the reliability of financial statements and in the reliability of audit reports. As such, the risk of material misstatement due to fraud permeates each of our standard-setting projects. And as I indicated, in each project, we consider the risk of fraud and, as appropriate, incorporate audit requirements to address that risk in that particular area. The current standard-setting agenda has also been significantly influenced by the economic downturn and the disruption in the credit markets. For example, as Dan has indicated, issues identified through the inspection of audits conducted during the economic crisis indicate that there's a need for the board to address certain of its standards, including, among others, audit firm quality controls, audits of fair value measurements, and the use of specialists by auditors, for example, of items that would be identified as needing improvement based upon issues identified during audits during the crisis. And the direction we go in those standards will reflect the inspection observations in that regard. Another factor being considered is the inability, as again was discussed by Dan, of the PCAOB to carry out required inspections of certain accounting firms outside the United States. Again, our standard-setting projects will consider this factor, and as some have already mentioned, whether that's included in audit reports, the identification of firms, or other matters, we'll consider as we're developing our standard-setting projects on the auditor's reporting model, for example, the use of other auditors outside the United States, and therefore auditors' responsibility with respect to the use of other auditors, especially in the context if they're not inspected, and procedures that might be necessary in that regard, therefore, and other standard-setting projects such as quality controls, and quality controls a firm might need to have if, in fact, they're relying on work of affiliates who are not subject to PCAOB inspections. So matters such as environmental factors identified during the economic crisis and challenges with respect to inspecting firms can also impact the direction of our standards. One other matter I'll mention, and although we don't presently have a project on our agenda related to auditor independence, my office is working closely with Division of Registration and Inspections, monitoring non-audit services being performed by accounting firms, particularly with respect to audit clients, to identify whether or not additional rulemaking is needed in that area. Our standard-setting agenda is also significantly informed, of course, by advice from the SAG, work of other standard-setters, and discussions that we have with the SEC. In summary, I think we have a very ambitious agenda, yet appropriate, that's responsive to the inputs that I just described. One last item I just want to mention before I turn to the agenda itself. As you look at the standard-setting agenda, the numbering of a particular item on the agenda has no impact or no meaning with respect to the priority of that item on the agenda. They've simply basically got on the agenda in a certain order, and that's the numbering. The priority is reflected by the fact that the item is on the agenda and the pace with which we plan to address that item. And those would be matters that we'd be interested in your views on, the pace with which we expect to deal with the item. So with that, we'll turn to the various different items that are on the standard setting agenda beginning on page 3. And of course, I've mentioned numerous times already the risk assessment standards, which were adopted by the board on August 5th. They've been published in the Federal Register by the SEC, and they are now pending SEC final approval. And pending that approval, those standards are intended to be effective for audits beginning after December 15th, 2010. With respect to communications with audit committees, the second item on page 3, the standard was proposed in March of 2010. Comments received were generally supportive of the standard and the need to make revisions to the existing standard, but suggested additional outreach. So in that regard, we held a roundtable in September, largely to get additional input from audit committee members about what audit committee members believed they should be receiving in terms of communications from auditors, and then reopened the comment period until October 21st. We greatly appreciated the input that we received from those who participated in that roundtable. And although we heard a number of differing views and perspectives, one thing was absolutely crystal clear, and that was the critical importance to the audit process of high-quality communications between auditors and the audit committee. Our goal with any reproposed or final standard here will be to further enhance investor protection by requiring critical matters to be communicated by the auditor to the audit committee in such areas such as including the establishment of an understanding of the terms of the audit with the audit committee rather than with management, requiring a discussion of the audit strategy with the audit committee, including the auditor's assessment of significant risks that will be addressed as part of the audit, and getting the audit committee's feedback on their view on those significant risks, a process we think will greatly improve risk assessment and the agreement on major areas to be addressed as part of the audit. Strengthening the discussion of critical accounting policies, practices, and estimates as part of the communications. Discussing any complaints or concerns raised regarding accounting or auditing matters both ways. We think the audit committee, or one item being considered in this, is for any matters that are raised to the auditor via any channel whatsoever, including their younger staff, employees of the company, whatever it might be, to discuss those complaints or concerns with the audit committee, but also frequently audit committees have hotlines or tip lines, et cetera, and those matters should be discussed, should be raised to the auditors for discussion as well, so the auditors can consider those matters. So there's a number of very important items that we think will be in one way or another an element of whatever standard we repropose or adopt, and again, we're taking carefully into consideration the matters that came up as part of the roundtable and matters that may yet come up as part of the opening of discussions through October 21st.